The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast. Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and with me today is Jane Marion, our food and dining editor. How's it going?
Hi, Elsie.
I love when you call me Elsie.
I know.
I don't know. It was kind of like a nickname in high school. I'm not even kidding.
Oh,
people
really?
Used to call me Elsie, and I feel like around here in the office, people call each other by their initials. It's just something
we have
adapted.
A lot of Laurens here. It's the most fratty thing I'm ever going to do.
It's actually, so when I was growing up, there was that show. I don't know if your kids ever watched that show, Laguna Beach. I don't know.
No.
It was like the very, very beginning of reality TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And the girl, her name was Lauren, but all of her friends called her Elsie. And I don't know why. It just kind of like stuck.
It fits.
Yeah. Lauren Conrad, do you know who she is?
Yeah,
she has like a lifestyle brand now.
It's a term of endearment.
Yes, I think so.
Anyway,
I love it.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So I've been listening to an audiobook. I love audiobooks.
Oh, yeah.
Especially because I drive around so much. And I'm doing Michelle Obama's Becoming.
She's the best.
And, you know, views my own, not to get political.
Mm-hmm.
She is the best. But it's just this, it's the best-selling memoir of all time. I'm sure the audiobook is doing really well, too. But
it's
what
incredible.
I love is that she narrates it. So it's like she's in my car. It's just the two of us. It's great. I highly recommend listening to
it. She has the best voice, too.
She does.
She's so well-spoken.
Yeah.
I remember, like, analyzing some of her speeches in college for, like, our your communications classes.
Yeah.
She just is so well-spoken. The content of what she's saying is always so great. So.
Yeah, I love that. My favorite detail so far is, you know, Obama worked for her. He was hotshot, you know, Harvard Law School first-year student who got this plum job on the 47th floor of this highfalutin law firm in Chicago where she worked. And she was just in charge of making sure he had a good summer because they were going to try to recruit him back for full-time work after Harvard. And, of course, they fell in love. But on his very first day, he was late to the
Oh, my gosh.
And she was so steamed because she's this, you know, type A, perfectionist, always punctual. And she's like, you know, who is this person who, you know, with the funny name who has the audacity to come to work late. So anyway, I love that.
They're so cute.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm learning so much just from hearing you talk about it.
So what's happening in the food world?
The food world is, you know, booming as always. Always big news. This week we actually learned the Bun Shop finally opened in Towson.
Oh, wow.
It took forever, I feel. So it was in the works for about 2 years, this location. Obviously, they have the flagship location in Mount Vernon. They had a location that was open on Lake Street for a little while,
mm-hmm.
and then it closed. So now they have the Mount Vernon, and finally Towson. I guess they were just working through, you know, red tape and jumping through
zoning,
hoops.
Yes,
all that kind of stuff. But finally open, it's right off of the Towson Circle on
mm-hmm.
Chesapeake Avenue. And people who know the Bun Shop know that it's known for its worldly coffee drinks. So they'll be doing Vietnamese iced coffee, dos leches lattes, honey macchiatos, and even a vanilla-infused Paris tea latte. Sounds awesome.
You could totally work there if you want to give up your day job.
I know. I've actually never worked in the food industry before. So
really?
I know. But sometimes when we do these, like, shadowing experiences, when we go to, like, report at restaurants, I kind of, like, feel like I get a glimpse into that world. I have so much respect for industry people. And
yeah. I was a hostess.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
At a gourmet burger joint outside Philadelphia called Winston's.
Oh.
In the early 80s. So,
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, gourmet burgers were, you know, like a thing. I mean, they're still having a moment, but it used to be a big deal to get some blue cheese on a burger.
Oh my gosh.
You know, they had different names, the burgers, much like the sandwiches at Eddie's. They were named for local landmarks and people.
Got it.
But I was a hostess, which I did not enjoy because I felt like the servers were getting all the tips and people would often ask me to clear the table or bring them food. And I'd be like, I'm the hostess.
I just feel like you learn so much having those experiences when you're growing up.
Yeah, for sure. You need to work in a restaurant.
I hope that I get that experience.
I think being a server would be fun.
Yeah. Maybe even just for a night, just to try it out.
We should try that.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, the Bun Shop is awesome. They also have, obviously, you know, their namesake buns that are stuffed with everything from spinach and feta to apple and Gruyere, cheese and onion. So really a great spot. And I feel like it's going to be awesome for Towson University students because they're open late. They're open until like 3 a.m.
Yeah, and nothing's open at 3 a.m. Exactly. In the city, other than Jongkok, the Korean place that people go to. You know, it's when you think about the county, there's really, other than Starbucks, I know when I, you know, take my laptop on a day off and I'm like, I'm going to write a story at a coffee house, there really aren't any cool, many. I don't think I'm forgetting any. And, you know, I always end up at a Starbucks, particularly the Mount Washington one because it's just a nice space.
I find it's hard as well because some of the really amazing coffee shops that we have in Baltimore that we're so lucky to have are really, really intimate. So even if you're like dead set, you have your heart set on going there and working, sometimes there's no space, which is the hardest part. I think when you show up, you have your laptop, you're ready to get your favorite drink, and then there's nowhere to sit and settle.
And then there's like a mommy and me group. Like when you go to Artifact, which I do love, often there's like a mommy and me group of like 10 women, usually it's women with their babies, and there's just like nowhere to go.
Which is cute. It's adorable, and I'm happy that there's those spaces for families.
It's cute, but not after hours.
Exactly. So the Bun Shop is now open, a great addition to the Towson area. And also another Baltimore County news, Baltimore County is getting its first Steak and Shake, which people are really, really excited about. I think that it's a Midwest thing. We have an editor on staff, Christine Jackson, who she is from St. Louis, and she is so excited about this. I don't really know if you've heard of Steak and Shake.
Yeah, speaking of burgers, people get sort of have this religious fervor about their hometown burger joints. Yeah. I have heard of it, but I've never had it.
Yeah.
But, you know, In-N-Out, this sounds like an In-N-Out, you know, the In-N-Out of L.A.
Yeah, and we are lucky we have Shake Shack on the East Coast, which is great. We have one in the harbor now, which a lot of people love. But from what she's told me, it's it was founded in Illinois in the 1930s, so it's like, you know, really, it's been around for a long time, and they use different kinds of steak to make their burgers, so like T-bone, sirloin, and they're known for their shoestring French fries, and hand-dipped milkshakes, and she was also telling me about something called a Frisco melt.
What's that?
Which is,
pray tell.
I know. It's I think it's similar to a patty melt, but in their version, there's like Thousand Island dressing and Worcestershire sauce. One of the hardest words to say.
Worcestershire. I can't say it.
You guys know what we're talking about. But yes, so it's like
A1.
Yes, exactly. But that kind of version of a patty melt. So lots of things to look out for. So this Steak and Shake is going to be in White Marsh. It's opening at the new Greenlee at Crossroads development, which is actually where the new Michael's Cafe location is. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful new development, and it's expected to open this summer. So
we'll take Christine and get her lowdown.
Awesome. Yeah, I think she would be the perfect person to be like, all right, I'm going to order for you guys and let's just get it and experience it together. So.
But you know how sometimes it's like the air and the water of a place? And I wonder, is, you know, Baltimore water and air, it obviously is different than the Midwest. Is it going to taste different on the East Coast than it does? We'll have to ask Christine.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good question. I know that's the case with like bagels, like New York bagels, water.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some good bagel places here, but I used to live in Florida, and there's really no great bagels down there.
Really? Yeah. That's disappointing.
Well, it's also really humid, so you know, the humidity makes the bread soggy almost immediately.
So much science that goes into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, also this week, opening day happened. We're so excited.
No big deal.
Yeah, the Orioles are back in season. They had their home opener. And, you know, it's exciting to see all of the different bars and restaurants and how psyched they get with specials. There's, we saw, like, lots of different O's bombs and things like that. And there was even our digital editor, Jess Mayhew, wrote a great story about a collaboration between Sliders and Clancy Haskett, who's worked in the stadium forever. And they collaborated on a beer dedicated to
Fancy Baltimore Clancy.
Yes.
Perfect.
So that's so creative and one of the many examples of innovative specials. And so also inside the park this year, there's a new craft beer hangout. It's from Flying Dog in Frederick. Mm-hmm. So it is Flying Dog Tap House. It's on the lower concourse near Gate C. They're going to have four beers on draft and lots of different cans. You can look out for Bleacher Beer, Raging Bitch, Snake Dog, Numero Uno, Dead Rise, all of the favorites. And it's great. There's lots of craft beer options in the stadium, but to have one kind of headquarters for a really well-known local brewery is great.
And I love the food of the stadium. I'm not a huge spectator sports person, but I do like baseball, and I do really like the O's. I really do. I've met Cal Ripken, and I like what baseball stands for.
Me
but
too.
The food is so good in the ballpark. I love the pit beef.
Yes, always. Yeah. That's always a staple. People love. I always see on Instagram the hot dogs with the crab mac and cheese on top. Sounds amazing. And also, when I was little, I remember getting the soft serve ice cream in the plastic helmet.
Of course,
it's just so nostalgic for me.
Did you grow up going to the games?
I did. Yeah, I remember that was like honestly one of my first memories of Baltimore City was going to Camden Yards with my parents. It's interesting. My mom is from Baltimore and my dad is from Long Island. So every season we try to go to an Orioles-Yankees matchup. It's fun. I mean, so it's funny because I've always had the mantra of like support the town that you're in and support the home stadium that you're in. But so it's usually me and my mom who are like decked out in our orange and then my dad and I have two sisters and for whatever reason, they've always just kind of inherited that New York pride from him.
Yeah.
So it's like we're split. Yeah. So they show up in their Yankees gear and I'm with my mom and my orange and we all sit together and it's always a fun time. But yes, to answer your question, it was always a fun memory for us.
Yeah. So this is a fun fact. I went to the World Series when the Phillies won.
You did?
In 1981.
Oh my gosh, what a memory.
Yeah, one of my best friends was really into the Phillies games and her parents had box seats and they were friends with a lot of the players. So I grew up knowing Larry Boa and Gary Maddox. And I mean, I was never really that into baseball, but it was fun. I would go to her house and they would be there. And I was the yearbook editor, so actually I had them help me design a yearbook page when they won the World Series, and I had their signatures on this page that was pretty low-tech
That's
back
so
then.
But cool.
It was like a collage, and they all signed it, so everybody got this, you know, a yearbook with their signatures.
I love that.
Gary, and I don't remember who else. Oh, Pete Rose. How could I forget?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Pete
That's
Rose.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a fun memory to have.
As much as I can tell you about baseball.
Exactly. I feel like we're in the same boat. Like, I'm obviously not the biggest diehard sports fan, but when it comes to supporting the city and, you know, I'm all for it. So we're happy that the O's are back in season. It's always fun, and hopefully it means warmer temperatures ahead.
Yeah, go O's.
So you take the good with the bad, I guess. We also had a closing that we learned about recently. So Cirillo Fine Foods in Belvedere Square is closing later this month.
That's a shame.
It is. I know you spend a lot of time at Belvedere Square.
I do, and I actually went there a lot in particular because they imported all their pasta from my favorite place in Philly called Toludo's, and they put their own label on it.
Oh, wow.
The ravioli and the tortellini, and I'd always buy their pesto, and in fact, I just defrosted my last jar this week. And put it on some rice with pine nuts and parm and, you know, just an easy, quick dinner when nothing else is in the fridge. So I would have savored it more had I known.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's such a staple and it's such a huge space in the market, too.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, what's to come.
Maybe Atwater's. It's sort of eating the whole market.
That wouldn't be a bad thing.
That would be a great thing.
I love Atwater's.
More pink enough Atwater's.
Yeah. So that's, you know, obviously a loss for Belvedere Square. But on the bright side, Cirillo also operated a second location in Baltimore City on the ground floor of the Porter apartment building in Brewers Hill, which closed recently due to like some kind of equipment issues. But from what we've heard, that's on its way back up to be back up and running in the coming coming months. So fingers crossed that we'll still have a presence here for sure.
Yeah, and we still have Trinacria, Mastellones.
Yes.
And I'm trying to think. Little Italy has a great little market.
Yes.
I can't think of the name of it, but it's right on the corner. They have great stuff.
Yeah, and Di Pasquale's,
right.
Yeah, there's so many places where we can go to get the, like, really authentic makings of an Italian feast, which is good. So fingers crossed that we see the reopening of the Brewers Hill location. And, you know, something else that I was reporting on this week was this new self-serve wine bar in Locust Point.
Have you heard about where?
This? I know, right? That seems to be a lot of people's reactions. They're just kind of like, wait, what is happening?
It feels like your parents left town with you know.
You're like, yes, let's get it.
And the wine fridge, the key is on open.
For the taking, yeah. So it sounds like it's going to be great. So it's in Locust Point, the former home of, not our house like in Remington, but our house. It was a neighborhood pizza joint. It was kind of a corner spot. So this place, it's called Serenity Wine Bar. It's owned by a woman named Neka Bilal, who I spoke to earlier this week, and she said that she was just really kind of fascinated by the concept. She had been to a couple of self-serve places in Washington, D.C., and so she's going to have 16 taps. I've been to a place like this. I went to visit a friend in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, really? They have it there.
They do, yeah. Not too long ago. And they have a place that's not only self-serve wine, but beer, cider, kombucha.
So American. All you can drink.
Yeah, it was massive. That was a really, really big place. And it was kind of overwhelming at first. But lots of fun. It is very, very easy to overindulge.
Yeah. Did you?
Yes, I think so. Well, so how it worked there, and I think similarly here, is they give you a wristband. So you start a tab, essentially, and then you go up to these like high-tech taps, and you swipe your wristband. You pour however much, if you want a small pour to taste or if you want a full pour, and then it like records it. And then at the end, you kind of like close out your tab. And then that's the scary part.
Wow. Because
you're like, what did I
do? Do you have any idea what you're spending?
Yeah. Well, I think there's probably like prices listed.
Yeah.
I don't really remember. It was a little
bit. But it's hard to know really what like 2 ounces is.
Oh my gosh. It's so hard. I remember I had a great time, and that's why I'm so excited for it to be local. So the technology will be similar at Serenity. It's going to be when you walk in, you can get a card that you load money onto. So, you know, you swipe the card at the tap, you pick how much you want of each wine, and she's hoping to have a variety of red and white and local, international, all kinds of things. So I think it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And judging by, you know, the commentary on our social pages this week, people are really
waiting online now.
Yeah.
So do you get one glass? How does that work? Or do you get a glass for red or a glass for white? Do you continue to use the same glass?
I think it would be nice to have different glasses.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how it worked when I was in Charlotte, but I think you know, you probably get the one glass to start, and then if you want to switch,
right,
I'm sure they have other glasses.
And is the wine good, or is it like the jug of Gallo that they're selling for $30 a glass?
I hope it's good. I'm really interested to see. She said that, you know, she's not really sure at the moment what the menu is going to be specifically, but I'm really interested. It would be really cool to see, you know, all different kinds, like local and international and like kind of rare blends that people don't see very often on tap. So
it kind of, I'm having a flashback to when I went to Atlanta there's a Coca-Cola museum down there.
Oh, okay.
And you learn the history of Coca-Cola, and then the highlight for your, I think it was $25 to get in, is the tasting room, and they give you paper cups and you can taste different Coke products from all over the world.
That's so cool.
But what's so fascinating is, you know, taste is different in different parts of the world. So in America, no surprise, we love sweet things. So the Coke is super, super sweet. But then the Coke products in a place like Italy tend to be a little more bitter, a little more citrusy. And it was sort of fun to, you know, wander around. And you end up drinking way more soda than you ever thought you would. But you know, that's the point.
That's it's really interesting.
Sort of educational.
Yeah, I mean, I think people just inherently think that Coca-Cola is, like, universal,
you know?
Like,
no.
You recognize the brand no matter where you are, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's...
Right. Even the same can of Coke here is different than, say, in a place like Japan.
That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a really cool...
Fun fact.
Yeah, something to think on, for sure. But I know you mentioned Italy.
Yes, I know. I've been mentioning it nonstop for the past couple weeks. I'm leaving tomorrow.
Oh, you're leaving tomorrow. I'm so excited for you.
And American Airlines actually sent us a menu that we could pick from. It was all scary food choices. So I usually, when I travel, I always bring my own food.
Wait, I'm curious what was on there.
Things that they shouldn't be attempting, like Korean beef tips. I'm like, it's American Airlines.
Yeah, give me some peanuts or something that I know.
Sometimes if you fly, you know, like Alitalia, then they have the actual food of the country. But, you know, I don't know why an American Airlines flight that's going to Italy is doing Korean food.
I would have to agree with you. I would have to agree with you on that. You're right. So did you pick something? Or?
My husband picked something for both of us.
Okay.
Like vegetarian.
You'll
something
be
or other. Yeah, but I won't be eating it.
But that's awesome. I mean, so like when you're preparing for a big trip like that, how do you usually, you know, do you look on apps? Do you get recommendations from friends?
Well, it's funny. My husband and I we travel really well together, but we're very, very different in our approach. He usually does all the planning. He has to have the map. He has to have the itinerary. He has to have the currency. Whereas I'm like, let's just wing it. How bad can it be? We're in Italy.
Yeah.
So this year, actually, I contacted a friend of mine, has a travel agent she uses, who's an expert on all things Italian. And she has an app that I downloaded on my phone. And she basically made reservations for us for dinners and made some recommendations for lunches and got us museum tickets. And all I have to do is show up. But I'm really excited about some of the restaurants because my marching orders to her were, you know, I want the authentic places, and most of those places just have an Italian menu. No English is spoken, or not on the menu at least.
That's how you know, though. That's how you know you're getting the full experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of the places, they take you into the kitchen and you know, see what's being served and you can point, but... I have two sisters who are fluent in Italian, actually. One lived in Italy for 25 years, and the other went for a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I don't speak a word.
So. Well, you are going to have the best time, and I can't wait to hear when you come back. We'll definitely talk about some of your experiences on the podcast.
Bring you back a ball of provolone and some wax.
Thank you.
Throw it in my luggage.
I would love that.
You know what I'm talking about? The kind they string from the ceiling.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like the real deal.
The real deal.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Would love it. That's awesome. And you were telling me, I wanted to mention, you were telling me about this really great New York Times article that you read this week.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Frank Bruni, columnist for the New York Times, wrote an article that really spoke to me, in particular this week, but it was about eating after the age of 50, dining out.
Yes.
And, you know, he actually was a New York Times food critic, which I had forgotten mm-hmm. for about 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
And, you know, he said, I used to go to the latest and the greatest and the trendiest spots, and people would say, I'm so jealous of you that I'd even get jealous of myself, which I thought was really funny.
Yes, he's a great writer.
He's great. But, you know, eating after 50, dining out after 50, he says, you know, you no longer care about the trendy. You want a quiet place where you can have a conversation. You want comfortable seating for your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the word restaurant I learned actually means to restore. So you want to feel restored.
Yes.
You don't want to feel like a hostage at the table, you know, because it took 5 hours.
Yeah.
You want to look at a menu and understand the ingredients on the menu.
Mm-hmm. That's often a problem. Like, I just feel like sometimes even, you know, me, I feel like I'm a seasoned diner and I go out to a lot of places, but sometimes I look at the menu and I'm like, I have to Google this. I'm so embarrassed I have to Google this because I don't know what this means.
Right.
So that level of comfort, I feel, totally. I agree, it has to be there.
Yeah. So it really spoke to me this week because I went to Philly to take my mom to a trendy place that she wanted to go to called the White Dog Cafe.
Okay.
They have a series of them in Philly, a number of them. And we went to the one in Haverford with my sister, and we thought she would just enjoy our company instead of focusing on the fact that she was uncomfortable because there was, you know, a wooden seat.
Oh, no.
She complained the coffee wasn't hot enough. She loves everything has to be piping hot. And she returned
my
coffee
mom's the same way.
Three
Wait,
times.
That's funny.
You know,
three times.
Mm. She wondered what the green stuff was when the calamari came. It was actually pesto because it came in marinara. I had a few dabs of pesto.
Oh, no.
And then, you know, it was a pretty expensive lunch, and I treated. And then she didn't mean to be rude, but at the end of it, she said, "We're never coming back here again."
Oh.
So it's just kind of funny. You know, when I bring her to Baltimore, we're always trying new places for my work, and I realized we had never taken her to the prime rib, so we took her there last year, and she loved it.
It's so iconic.
Yeah,
she said
this is the best restaurant in Baltimore. So it's kind of funny. You know, Ina Garten, Barefoot Contessa, was talking in this article about how she and her husband Jeffrey tend to go to the same places again
yes.
and again and again, which really surprised me because she's a you know, a cookbook author. She's sort of, you know, woman about town. You wouldn't picture her having a place that she constantly goes to. So,
but she probably just really admires that consistency.
Yeah.
And just knowing that there's a reliable place that she and her husband can go to. They can hear each other when they
sit
down.
Yeah.
And I think I see both sides of this. I'm not over 50.
You're half of 50.
I'm half of 50, to be exact.
And I'm 56.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So, not ouch. But I think I see kind of both sides of this because I do. On one hand, I think it's always so exciting, especially in Baltimore, to go to the new trendy places and, you know, hear what all of the fuss is about.
Right.
You know, when you hear anecdotally that people love it. But at the same time, I also really, really love, you know, at the very least, just being able to hear my dining companion,
yes.
you know.
Yeah.
I actually went to a restaurant with my parents fairly recently, and it wasn't the restaurant's fault. It was just we were there on a night where there was, like, a birthday party very
close
to us.
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah.
And we couldn't hear each other. We were literally screaming over the table trying to just get a sentence. And, you know, it's like when you're spending – you're choosing where to spend your dining dollars.
Of
it's like
course.
You want that experience where you can just hear each other and spend time together.
And be restored.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Well,
so I think it's a great article. And
yeah, my favorite part of the article is where he talks about, you know, the communal dining trend. I remember not liking that too. Like, I don't want to sit with strangers, but
sure, communal. Yeah.
At first, it's fun. You know, people talk about their vacations or their veterinary bills, but, you know, or their problems at work, but after a while, you know, you don't really want to be at a table with those people. You just want a private table. You
yes.
get over that fast.
Yeah.
So until the next trend comes along.
Right.
So, yeah.
No, it's definitely a good piece, and I was able to read some of it, and he's such a great writer and would definitely recommend it. But speaking of dining out, I had a really great meal at Ida B's Table this week.
Ah,
I love it there.
Me too.
It's such a special atmosphere. We went on a Friday evening, and there was a little bit of live music. Not too loud. We could hear each other. We could hear each other with the table.
Thank goodness.
But really, just kind of like a nice soundtrack.
It feels good in there.
It does.
There's like a lot of love.
That's the exact right way to put it. I think it just feels very special. And I had, Chef Dave had on special pan-seared rockfish.
It's rockfish season.
Yes, it's so great. I think there are a lot of places that do it well. But he served it with country fried potatoes and what he called an oxtail sassafras reduction, which, I mean, it was so good. The fish was very well cooked, and it was juicy and flaky, and I really just love the atmosphere in there. And I have to tell you about this cocktail I had that was, like, right up my alley. I'm really into, like, spicy. My friends always joke, like, Lauren's like the spicy cocktail girl.
And they were spicier after the cocktail.
Oh my God. People tell me that. But it was great. It was, so there was some dark rum in it, and apple chai and blackstrap bitters, and it was kind of like spicy and sweet. It kind of felt like a fall cocktail, but in the spring.
But yummy.
Yes, very yummy. So it was all around just a great experience.
You sound like a barista. Maybe when you work in a kitchen, not a barista, a bartender.
Yes.
You should be a bartender.
That's what I want to do. I want to be a barista one day. I want to shadow behind the bar, and it's great. I mean, I just want to be able to say,
you know,
I've had that experience.
I have a bartending diploma.
You do?
Yes.
Wait, did I know this?
Probably. Ask me where it's from. I'm very proud about it. Michelle Obama and I have something in common.
Wait, where is your bartending
Harvard.
From?
Harvard.
Jane. Yes. Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I took a bartending course.
You could show me.
No, you know what? It's been a long, long time. Yeah. But yeah, there's a famous bartending class that's taught by Harvard Student Agencies. And I took French there one summer and took the class. And I wasn't even old enough to drink, but somehow it was legal enough for me to take the class.
Look at you.
So it was sort of like a lab style class. And yeah. You find out that there's maybe six basic cocktails, and then it's garnishes and you know what mixers and the shape of the glass and on the rocks or not, that you know, that makes the difference. So this was way before the craft cocktail revolution, when you know there are thousands of kinds of derivations. Yes. Now, but back then there really weren't.
Is so cool.
I never worked as a bartender though, but I think it would be fun.
You totally could. Yeah. You absolutely could. That's awesome. I love that fun fact about you.
Sorry, I digress.
No, I love that. Where have you been eating this week?
So on a rainy day, it was pretty much every day this week, but on a rainy day this week, I went to Mount Vernon Marketplace, met a friend for lunch, and there's some new spots there. It was kind of fun to walk around and see. But I went to the local Oyster, my very favorite.
The best.
And did not get the shrimp salad or the lobster roll, both of which are phenomenal.
Yes.
I had crab soup to kick off crab season.
Amazing.
I've never had it there before, actually, and it was just excellent. I could tell it was Maryland crab. It was, you know, there's such a shortage of Maryland crab that when people get Maryland crab, they think it's on the fishy side. I would say it's crabby. It's not fishy, but it's
right.
Sweet and has that crabby, briny
taste.
There's
a difference, yeah.
But it was perfect, you know, string green beans and some fresh corn and chunks of carrots, and it came with two slices of just the best buttered bread you could ever imagine. It dunked into the soup, and all that for $8. So it was great.
$8. And I imagine it was like a big bowl.
It was a bowl,
oh,
the two pieces of bread. Yeah, really a great deal.
A steal. That's
and just
amazing.
So satisfying.
Yeah,
you know.
I feel like that is always, like, if you're thinking about, like, oh, where can I go in to get a good meal, not necessarily somewhere where I have to, like, make a reservation or sit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's the best go-to
for,
like,
sit on
classic
your,
Baltimore.
Yeah, vinyl bar stool, great for out-of-towners. And the marketplace is busy. It was packed. The brown rice place and the taco place are very popular.
The taco place, it's actually in our open and shut column this week, I mentioned they're having a second anniversary party.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Cholita's Tacos.
It feels like just yesterday.
I know, right? It feels like just yesterday the market opened, but it's been like 2 or 3 years
Has
now.
It?
Yeah,
wow.
Maybe more. I don't know. Time flies.
Yeah, it does.
And Jane, I'm going to miss you next week.
I'll miss you.
You're
not, you know, it's a toss-up. You were Italy, but.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I completely understand.
I'll miss you too, and we'll get caught up when I come back.
I cannot wait to hear more about your trip when you come back. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. You can, as always, pick up a copy of our April issue, which is on the newsstands now. It's our Best Places to Live issue. We have a story about the local roots of bluegrass music and also a medical marijuana primer, lots of great things in the issue. And you can also check out our food coverage every day at BaltimoreMagazine.com.
Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.